You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Welcome along to William Hill's Daily Racing Podcast for Monday. Looking ahead to all the action coming up from Ripon, Brighton and Windsor, which of course you can hear on William Hill's Racing Radio from 1:40 with Mark Walton, Andy Holding and Gareth Topham. Previewing and giving full selections on the racing from those venues. But for now, to look ahead to that action and also to look back at the weekend, my name's John Gibby and I'm joined by Lord John Budden. John, how's it going?
I'm very well indeed, John. Great to be here. And there's interesting racing on Monday, although the prize money not all that high.
No, I noticed that myself, actually. It's maybe getting to that point in the flat season where sort of it's peaked and we're beginning to...
I think that's true. It's certainly peaked, and I fear that the early week's racing is not of great value.
Mm. Well, we'll look ahead to what's coming up on Monday in a short while, but first up, let's look back on some of the best racing from Saturday, John. And we'll start off with the feature race of the whole day. That is, of course, the Solario Stakes at Sandown, that Group 3 for two-year-olds. Often a big clue for the big three-year-old races coming up next season. And we saw Massar win the race for Charlie Appleby and James Doyle. Were you impressed with the performance?
Yes, I was impressed with the performance. I'm very impressed with James Doyle, actually. There was sort of question marks about him right at the beginning of the year, but I think he has ridden extremely well. And he seems to have his mounts in the right place at the right time for much of the races. And I thought he gave Massar an excellent race. Massar quickened well. And I think he's a useful horse. He'd got quite good form, of course, before the Solario. James Doyle had ridden the winner of the Solario once before, Kinsman, so perhaps that may be a precedent for greater things. I believe Massar's going for the Royal Lodge, and I would have thought he got a decent chance, and he looks to be a horse who's on the improve and really needs to be noted wherever he runs next. Frankie Dettori's mount, Purser, I think it was, in the race, didn't get any sort of a run, but even so, I don't think he would have worried the winner.
Charlie Appleby has said that he thinks this horse, Massar, is going to be an out-and-out three-year-old, and anything he does at two is probably going to be a bonus. With that in mind, he is quoted in some of the markets at this early stage for next year's Classics, John. 16-1 currently for the 2,000 guineas, and 25-1 for the Derby. Now, of course, it's very early days, but after that performance, can you see why is that sort of a price?
Yeah, I can, yes. And he is, as I say, a progressive sort, almost certain going to be better as a three-year-old. I was quite impressed with the way that when the button was pushed by James, he quickened well. I would have thought at this stage it was more of a Guineas horse than a Derby horse, but as you say, there's an awful lot of time before we actually get to Newmarket next spring.
It'll be interesting to see what becomes of the remaining two-year-old campaign and the three-year-old campaign of Massar, the winner of the Solario Stakes, the Group 3 at Sandown on Saturday. There's actually another Group 3. Everyone talks about the Solario when they talk about this meeting at Sandown. It's actually shares in terms of the highest ranking race of the meeting, John, with the Atalanta Stakes, so the Group 3 for fillies and mares over a mile, which Al Jazzy was the winner of for Marco Botti and Andrea Zaini. What do you make of that performance?
I thought he was good. Al Jazzy definitely had the form to win that race, and Andrea Radzini rode a very confident ride, I thought, sweeping down the outside, put it to sleep in a matter of strides when Al Jazzy really got going. But the Royal Ascot form was sound, and wherever Al Jazzy goes, and Marco Botti's got definitely a gun with plenty of ammunition in it.
Well, even though Sandown was the sort of most important, most revered meeting on Saturday, John, and even though it wasn't the strongest Saturday that we have in the season by a long stretch, there was also a big race over at Beverley, pretty much their big race of the year, that being the Beverley Bullet Sprint. And it was great to see Take Cover The 10-year-old win the race for David Griffiths, wasn't it?
Yeah, really tremendous. I thought it ran extremely well, you know, because although it disappointed in the Nunthorpe, the ground was definitely a gin, and I think perhaps a really tough galloping track like York is not quite the ground or the place for Take Cover. But Beverly on Saturday was ideal. He was drawn well. The opposition was not that great. He was definitely dropping in form. Runs before the Nunthorpe had indicated he was extremely well. The ground was in his favour. Tom Queeley got him out of the stalls really quickly, and I'd never thought he was going to be caught, and he wasn't caught. It was a grand performance, and I think it was his 12th career win, and you know he can go on, because when conditions are in his favour and a track is the type where it suits front runners and he's well drawn, he can nip away from the start, and he's as tough as old Harry.
It seems to be with sprinters in particular on the flat, John, that sometimes they maintain their form and manage to continue into a double-digit stage more efficiently than some horses campaigned over further.
Yeah, I think that's right, because basically when the trainers have got them fit and ready to run, it's just a matter of keeping them on the boil, as you might say, not giving them too much work at home. They come to the races fresh, and they don't have to exhaust themselves over a long trip, despite the fact, of course, they've got to move very quickly. Border Le Scott was a perfect example, wasn't he? And the Basterman horse went on until he was 12. I think he didn't win after 10, but my goodness, he went very close. And I would expect the same with Take Cover. David Griffiths, you know, he's a very smart man with sprinters. Duke of Firenze, for example, another one. And he's a much underrated trainer. He trains at Bawtry near Doncaster, but many people wouldn't have heard his name. Those who actually know his ability realise that once he's got his horses fit, they run really well.
Well, Take Cover, it was who won the Beverly Bullets over at Beverly, appropriately, their listed race on Saturday. Anything else you took out of Saturday, John, or was that mainly it?
Well, I was interested in this little sort of competition which the ITV racing team were running about the best horse currently in training. And I'm glad that Enable came out on top, because I think she is clear-cut at the moment. If she wins the Arc, and I hope she jolly well does, then you've got to say she is, at the moment, the top horse in the world, in my view. Of course, the Arc could be a tricky deal, despite the fact that she's even money favourite. Chantilly and the way that the French run their races, plus the fact that she's coming to the Arc on a busy season. But John Gosden said she's been in tremendous shape, and there's no reason why Enable should not crown what's been a marvellous season with victory in the Arc. I do hope she does, and if she does, she has to take the crown.
Well, speaking of that poll that ITV ran about the best horse in training, not just in Britain or Ireland, it was in the world, wasn't it? And Enable won it very, very easily. I think it's probably difficult to build a case for Arrogate given his recent performances over in the States, but do you not think there might be a case for Winx, the Australian mare, to be called the best in the world?
Well, yeah, that's possible. But I thought it was a very shrewd observation by one of the ITV panel, who said, yes, Winx is obviously tremendous, 19 straight wins, but most of them have been against the same type of horses all the while. And I feel that is rather the case with Winx. Tremendous durability, great speed. She's done tremendously well, obviously. But I just feel that Enable's opposition has been, you know, really tremendously strong throughout the season. And she would deserve it for me over Winx.
Well, Enable will presumably run next in the Arc, and if she can win that, as you say, John, there will be little doubt that she is best horse in training potentially in the world. That's run at Shanty on the 1st of October, and she's currently even money favourite with us here at William Hill. Well, now let's turn our attention to racing on Monday, John, and it feels a bit funny taking a step down for talking about the likes of Enable and Winx, and now we're heading to the 2:30 at Brighton, the Ian Carnaby, of course, selling handicap, an interesting race on and off the track, a class 6 furlong for horses aged 3 and above. We've got 15 declared to go to postage. You might expect a bumper field, a bigger field than you might expect for a normal race in these conditions. What do you make of the runners?
Well, first of all, I chose this race because Ian Carnaby and also, of course, David Ashforth have been connected with this seller for a long time. And Ian's been very much a Brighton man, actually. I believe he lives more in the West Country than near Brighton. But when he writes, and he writes extremely well, he has a great soft spot for Brighton, and he and David invented this race, and it's been really quite a moment to savour in the early autumn at Brighton. And 15 runners are going to post, and Ian will make certain that the winner is well rewarded. Top of the list, we've got Perfect Pastime, who has to be considered in this contest, although was well beaten by Seamster last time out at Lingfield, I think it was, and started at a very long price, but does know how to win. And I think Jim Boyle will have that one pretty well ready for the contest. Other trainers who do well at Brighton and like to have runners in this race are, for example, Tony Carroll, who has a runner with a chance, Time Medician, although Time Medician has got to improve quite a bit in this contest to win it. I narrowed it down to the two. I like Perfect Pastime at the top, but equally so, I'm going to go in selection for Lady Morell, who is Joe Tweet. And he's been putting in quite a few winners, has Joe, up and down the country over the past month or so. Team in very good shape. And Lady Morell runs Brighton well. The ground got rather soft last time out and made late headway and finished fourth. But prior to that, had only just gone down to the special one. And I feel that the ground is faster at Brighton quite definitely for tomorrow's race, unless we have a overnight downfall. And the trip is right, and the trainer informs, I'm going to go for Lady Morell.
Lady Morell for John and the 2:30 at Brighton. The Ian Carnaby setting handicap. It's always an amusing race, isn't it? I remember reading one of the David Ashforth pieces about this race a few years ago, and he said the Racing Post spotlight for this race on 1 year started with the line that they don't come much weaker than this, but something has to win.
Well, he's a great writer, David Ashforth. There's no question about that, and Ian Carnaby is as well.
Well, we move from Brighton to Ripon for their 3:10, 1.5 mile handicap for horses aged 3 and above 11 going to post in this one. And, well, slightly smaller field than the last race, John, but still a fair old turnout for this. What do you make of the runners here?
Yes, well, Mick Easterby might go fairly close in this because he's got a couple with chances at the top. Tapis Lieb actually is a horse I like, but I think the handicapper has actually got him in the grip now. Of the Mick Easterby runners, I do prefer Tamayu's Magic, who I thought ran perfectly soundly last time out at Thirsk, staying on quite well to finish third. I think he's suited by Ripon more than by Thirsk, so I think Tamayu's Magic will go pretty well in the contest. Then we've got Busy Street, who interests me quite a lot. This is Sally Haynes trains Busy Street, Ben Curtis in the saddle. Sally was, of course, the partner of the late Alan Swinbank, and it's taken a bit of time for her to, you know, get the horses really primed and ready to move. But she had a good winner at Ripon at the last meeting, and I thought Busy Street showed pretty good form at Haydock last time out. Finished third, but wasn't beaten far. I think less than a length. The winner was Indy, and I would have thought Busy Street has to go fairly well. And then putting in another one, I think Selling All the Time comes into this contest with a chance. Michael Appleby trains this horse and was a fair second last time out. I think it was a Catterick to All for Nothing. Not disgraced before that either. I think it's quite interesting that Michael Appleby has booked Paul Hannigan for the mount here on Selling All the Time. So I narrow it down to those two, Sailing All the Time and Busy Street. And I think Busy Street has got a fair chance.
Busy Street, sorry, Ains and Ben Curtis, the choice of John Budden in Ripon's 3:10 on Monday. Just 10 minutes later, Windsor has a 5-furlong handicap, John. 9 going to post here, and interesting to see a few familiar faces in the race who have run well recently in some better handicaps than this.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And it's got one of my favourite sprinters in the contest who has run well last time out. That's Wasim Faris. I have a weak spot for Wasim Faris. So does Chrissy Pimlott, incidentally. Whenever this horse runs, C. Pimlott Sr. will automatically place a finger on Wasim Faris and say, that is going to be my choice. Actually ran much better than previously this season. Last time out, a good winner at Salisbury, and I don't really see why he shouldn't follow up with another sound performance here. Then we've got Vimy Ridge, who was a good winner over course and distance last time out, and again, seems to like Windsor, likes this time of year, could easily go close. And I always like Ray Guest in this sort of contest at Windsor. He's got Midnightly, and Midnightly was admittedly a winner at Wolverhampton last time out and is making the transition to the turf, but you don't want to ignore anything trained by Ray Guest. Monumental Man's in the contest as well, isn't he, John?
Yeah, Monumental Man.
You know, he needs to improve a bit, but he's fairly consistent. It wouldn't surprise me to see Monumental Man go quite close. I think this is a question of which of our old friends is absolutely at his best tomorrow. I'm hoping it will be Wasim Faris.
Wasim Faris for John, then, in the 3:20 at Windsor. The feature race on their card on Monday. And 20 minutes later, we have the feature race at Ripon, the 3:40. It's also over 5 furlongs, also a handicap. And we've got 9 going to post for this one, John.
Yes, this is the £12,000 race, the sprint at Ripon. It's the feature race there that started on Monday afternoon, and it's a David Chapman Memorial. And, of course, Ruth Carr is David Chapman's granddaughter, and she's got a fancied runner here, Lexington Place. Now, Lexington Place did not get much of a run at Carlisle last time out. I was there, and they all converged on the stands rails, as they quite often do at Carlisle when the ground's on the soft side. Many people think it's best to be on the stand side in those conditions. And Lexington Place was just a little bit slow into stride and consequently found a wall of horses in front coming towards the furlong marker, didn't manage to get a gap and finished 6 behind Tarbush, who is running in this race at Ripon this afternoon or Monday afternoon. Before that, Lexington Place had won well at Ponte, had not been disgraced at Nottingham, and one has to feel that Ruth Carr will desperately want to win this race, and Lexington Place will be, you know, really trying his guts out to score for Grandpa Chapman. But there are opposition worthwhile mentioning clearly, and Paul Midgley, John, has his team in really good shape, doesn't he? And he's got 2 horses in this contest. He's got Tarbush, who I thought looked really well before the race at Carlisle, and the rather shrewd observer who was with me at the paddock said, my goodness me, the Midgley horse looks really, really shiny in coat and looks determined to give his best, and he actually won quite cosily at Carlisle, Tarbush, and I think Paul Mulrennan will get a pretty good run out of Tarbush in this race. And then we've got an old friend of mine, Sylvanus, or Sylvanus, who was the second of the Midgley horses in this contest. Generally reserves his best for Musselboro, though. Ran well, I thought, at Chester last time out. By no means disgraced behind normal equilibrium Imperium finished a close fourth or fifth and could go well. But I think it's between Tarbush and Lexington Place, and much as I would like Lexington Place to win, I'm going to go for Tarbush.
Tarbush, the choice of John Budden in the 340 at Ripon. So those are the four races, John. And if you'd just like to recap your selections in case, I don't know, maybe someone wants to put a fiver down on a fourfold on your selections and reap the rewards.
Well, I have to say, I don't remember them by heart now. The 2:30, the Incarnate Seller at Brighton. I've gone for Lady Morrell and Joe Tweed. Then we go to the 3:10 at Ripon. And the choice there was Busy Street for Sally Haynes. That takes us to Windsor, and I weakness, perhaps. I had to go for Wasim Farris in this contest. And the 3:40, much as I'd love to see Lexington Place win for the Chapman family, I've gone for Tarbush.
Fantastic, John. Thanks very much for your thoughts, as always, on the William Hill Daily Racing Podcast.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.